We made it to a Thursday here on Main Street on Prairie Public. My name's Craig Blumenschein, and we are glad that you are with us today. Coming up in the second half of today's show, News Director Dave Thompson and I reviewed this week's news headlines. Then Matt Olean dives headfirst into Mission Impossible, The Final Reckoning. Tom Cruise takes on AI, betrayal, and physics itself. And Matt asks the real question, is Cruise the GOAT? And Main Street begins today with all there is to know about Arts Fest. It's June 7th through 8th at University Park in Grand Forks. You need to get ready for a weekend where creativity takes center stage. Art Fest returns to Grand Forks, transforming University Park into a vibrant hub of color, sound, and community spirit with nearly 100 artists, artisans, food vendors, and musicians. This free family festival draws over 20,000 art lovers from across the region. Joining me to discuss is Vicki Arndt. She's the curator for the Public Arts Commission. Vicki, welcome to Main Street.
Thank you.
And also Dean Opp. He's on the board of the Public Arts Commission and is the committee chair for Arts Fest. Welcome to Main Street, Dean.
Thank you very much.
All right, let's give everyone the big picture. Dean, let me start with you. What is Arts Fest? And what makes it such a special event for Grand Forks and the entire region?
Well, it is the best weekend in Grand Forks that you could ever have because it'll be sunny, breezy, the perfect temperature. It'll be outdoors, mosquito-free, full of food, art, and all the fun you could possibly have in an afternoon. How's that for an answer?
That sounds like the best time ever to me. Vicki, for folks who have never been, what should they expect when they walk around the park for the weekend?
Well, they are going to experience many, many great artists that will be there. And the food, the music, the community, it's such a fun event. And I am responsible for what is called the gallery. We have a community room that we're going to set up as an art gallery. And this year's idea, what I think is a fantastic idea, is we asked the UND Department of Art to stage a sort of living, working artist studio. And they'll be making art and showing and demystifying what the artist studio experience is all about.
We mentioned earlier that this is a family-friendly event. What do kids, what do they see, and what do they like when they come to an Arts Fest event like this?
Sure, and I'll take that when I got involved with the Art Fest 5 years ago, that it was very strong in terms of having booths with lots of craft kind of art. Had a little bit of what we would call the fine art, but that was sort of an area. We had food trucks, but we did not have anything for the kids. And when we moved to the park, there's a splash park already existing. And so we said, well, let's add to that. Let's add some other activities. And so there's organizations within Grand Forks that do things with kids. We invited them to come out, not only to promote what they do normally, but then to give kids something to do while mom is shopping or dad is shopping. And this year we're actually up to like 10 different groups. We have 4 featured groups that do hands-on make and take type of activities, and then some smaller like table activities from 6 other organizations. So to me, that's the great partnership. I come out of education, work with kids, and so that's sort of the area I wanted to add. Vicki, on the other hand, comes from the art world, and what she's done over the last couple of years is started to elevate our art offering. So as you go to a typical art fest someplace or an art festival, you might see a lot of that craft type stuff, which is great, things for your yard, things for your house. But usually what you don't see is actual high-end art. And that's an area that Vicki has started to develop. So we have a number of booths, but we also have a room that's more protected for more fragile art. And a couple of years ago, Vicki piloted this and had a gallery that was sponsored. And this year we're bringing it back again with this UND connection that Vicki talked about. And so we have some brand new artists that have are in various stages of their university career, and they're able to show this off in a curated gallery setting, which we're very excited about.
Before we move on, Vicki, I need to point out Dean is a Hall of Fame teacher. He's a member of the Grand Forks Teacher Hall of Fame. Congratulations about that, by the way, Dean.
I think they did that just to make sure I would never wiggle my way back into the classroom. It's kind of out the door, slam it behind you.
I have a feeling that's not true. But let's go back to the Arts Fest. Vicki, it is 100 artists and performers, as we said before. How do you go about selecting and curating such a diverse group?
People apply to get a booth, and it goes through Dean, and there hasn't been really anyone that we would turn away. We want to give everybody an opportunity. I also am a professor and taught college for 20 years. And so I really want to educate everybody in Grand Forks from, you know, what art is, what it can be, and really try to elevate it. So I like to have artists that are just beginning, so that we can follow along and see their progress, to artists that sell their work in galleries in LA and New York. You know, you need that range. I really want everyone. I think that's my goal with working with a public arts commission, is to really teach people what art can be and what it is. And it's not exclusive. It's, you know, not masturbatory, so to speak, you know, that anybody can enter it. Art can be intimidating if you go to the museums or art galleries, but I want to open it up to everyone. So that's what we're trying to do.
It's my impression that this is an event that really tries to bring communities together. How does it create connection across backgrounds and generations, like you just talked about?
Well, I'd like to handle that in that when we look at the Public Art Commission, which is a volunteer board, it used to be an organization that had an executive director and ran in that manner. But in that COVID era where everything sort of got changed, it switched to just a volunteer board, and that the people on the board or the ArtFest committee all have those our personal backgrounds. And that when you talk about, you know, celebrating our community or building those partnerships, I talked about how I brought in the activities because that was kind of my background. Well, this event has been going on for a number of years. It's always had music or entertainment. But in the last couple of years, one of our board members has his own band, and he's really tuned in to that scene, and he is really up the game of the entertainment. We have people that come to the event just to sit, have a corn dog, and listen to the music that's being provided. So it's this mini music festival. With Vicki, it's sort of this mini fine arts festival. Obviously we've got the food trucks. Maybe I kind of cater towards that too, because I do like to have
that. Let's talk about the food. No festival's complete without it, right? So what kind of food vendors are we going to see?
Well, we have the whole gamut. You've got your snow cone lemonade type sort of a little treat, all the way up to, there's a couple of vendors that this weekend they're with us. Next weekend they're at a carnival. Some of the bigger, you've got all your funnel cakes and such, corn dogs. And then we have some local restaurants and folks that only do this. That's one of their main things. And it's we've got ethnic food that is just wonderful to have. And it's fun to see these local folks come out and be able to have a food truck for us.
We're enjoying our conversation with Vicki Arndt and also Dean Opp. Vicki is the curator for the Public Arts Commission in Grand Forks, and Dean Opp is on the board of the Public Arts Commission and is committee chair for Arts Fest, which is this Saturday and Sunday in Grand Forks, and it'll transform University Park. There'll be 100 artists and others, plus 20,000 of us who will enjoy all that the park will have to offer this weekend. Tell me more about the role, Vicki, of the Public Arts Commission, and how do you support local and emerging artists even beyond Arts Fest?
Well, that's a big question. I kind of don't even know where to start. I mean, I moved here from New York City working in the art world and didn't really know that there were so many talented people, artists in town. I was absolutely amazed. I couldn't believe it. And of course, I want to support them as much as possible. I mean, like I said, I've been blown away. And recently, I was asked to curate the hospital's art collection with just local artists. And that's really unheard of in my world, you know. And to be able to do it on such a high level with people that live around the corner has been such a pleasure for me. So my role really is to kind of begin to suss out, look for artists, try to encourage them, inspire them, and, you know, try to do exhibitions. We have a few that we do with the Public Arts Commission. I mean, we do as much as we can, and we are becoming quite successful at it now. And maybe Dean can add more to that as well.
Well, you know, I would say that I look at what we do as a Public Art Commission. Our whole mission is to promote art within our community and to provide not only public art for the community to appreciate, but to support our artists that are local, because artists need to be supported, otherwise they go away. And so through Vicki has had a great role in connecting the artists with our community, encouraging them to be part of our various events, and so that Art Fest has been one of the events that she's hooked these artists into and said, "Hey, come out, participate, be part of this."
Okay, I'm going to park my car. I'm going to get out on a beautiful day. What are the must-sees at Art Fest?
Food.
Food. That'll be good. All right. I've had my great corn dog or some of the ethnic food that is available. I haven't had a corn dog in years. We just had a family discussion about that. So maybe Saturday or Sunday I can have my first corn dog in a while. But all right, I'm done. I've got it. I'm full. I'm ready to go out. What maybe are some of the awesome artists that are going to be there that really I should make sure to find?
Well, I'm selfish and I want you to go to the gallery because I want you to see what it's like, excuse me, for these artists to make art in real time. Because most generally people don't know what an artist does in their studio or how long it takes to make a work of art or what kind of dedication it takes. And artists are the hardest working people I've ever known. Typically, they have to have a full-time job and then they do their art on the side. And so I want people to see that side of artists. So you are going to the gallery first.
Okay.
Do not stop at a food truck. Do not go shopping. Come and look at what real artists do.
All right, Dean, I've been to the gallery. I've seen what real artists do. It's awesome.
And now you've got your food. And then I would say that one of the things that is an element to this particular festival is the park itself. And that I will say the very first year that I was in charge, I had these booths all lined up nice and even in a row, kind of like they were on a street. I had them in this beautiful grid. I had the food trucks facing each other. So you had this little food alley while there was no room to stand in line. If anyone stopped when they were walking down the booths, they created a traffic hazard. And so luckily, another partner that we have a lady who has design, interior design. She works in the real estate world, and she's helped design, and she's actually got a tweak this year to the layout. We're going to start doing that. And she incorporates the walk through the park. So after you are full and you've looked at the gallery, you can stroll through the park. And it is sort of a challenge. If you have a specific booth that you want to find, you're going to have to, you know, kind of weed your way through. We have a map, but otherwise I would just encourage you, now that you're full, let's walk off those calories and let's walk all the way up and down throughout the park and see all the booths.
Art is such an inclusive term, right?
Yeah.
Am I going to see sculptures? Am I going to see painters? Am I going to see drawers?
Photographers,
the whole gamut.
Yep.
And then also the things like some people might think of this first, where you think of the craft. So I've got something I can put in my garden. I have a sign that I can put on my house. And it's things that, one of the things I love about it is that even the vendors, I know the vendor, when they come the next year, they've got something different. And the guy that does some woodwork, and last year he had these coasters. He'd cut off pieces of wood, and he had these branded coasters. I was like, oh, that's perfect for the porch. There's treats for the dogs. My son has a dog that comes, and he walks around, and there's a lady that does dog treats. It's like, so there is honestly something for everyone, and not everything will be for you. But then you just walk by and walk to the next one.
You have sponsors for the event. Who are some of your primary sponsors?
Well, we have, obviously, we work with the Park District. That's where the event takes place. We have, I'm not going to list all, because there's actually too many to list, but I will say that the Park District and the city are major partners to help make the event happen. There's an awful lot of logistics that go into this. But we also have over 20 businesses that like the idea of public art. They support us throughout the year with maybe other events, but they really focus on this because this is a very public facing event. There are, you know, 20,000 visitors that go through. And so it's nice to have this for our community. It's kind of a kickoff to the summer. School got done. It's the first weekend of the summer. In our community, the very next weekend, our farmers markets start, and they do farmers market every weekend, but they wait for this event. This is sort of the kickoff.
What's the future of Art Fest?
Bigger.
Yeah?
Taking over this.
20,000 folks seems huge to me already.
We're going to take over North Dakota.
What would you like to see, maybe add in future years, if you could have a crystal ball for us?
Let me tell you, my little thumb clicker gets hard as I click through all those numbers. No, we don't click, but...
Seriously, do you have anything on the chalkboard that maybe, you know, next year or the year after, we'd like to maybe do X, Y, or Z?
Well, personally, I would like to expand this idea of a fine art gallery somehow. Not sure how we could do that, because fine art needs to be enclosed. Most artists don't want to put their stuff outside for any given reason, you know, and I understand that. I'm an artist as well, and I wouldn't put my stuff outside. So I want to try to be able to find something where we could put works in, where artists will feel a little more comfortable. Sure. Maybe a bigger space.
Volunteering in this event, this Saturday and Sunday, it might be a little too late to try to make that happen. But in the future, if somebody wants to volunteer and support the mission of the Public Arts Commission, what should they do?
Well, another community partner has stepped in this year for the first time, our Young Professionals Group, who has taken this on as a volunteer project. The group is obviously made up of young professionals, and one of their missions is to volunteer throughout the community. And so we actually do have, they have a sign up that's currently active right now to go around and do hospitality things within the event, and other little, you know, whatever it takes to make this event happen. I have had people that stop out right at the event and ask if there's anything that they can do, and I can usually put them right to work. Or if it's towards the end of event, I get their name and contact info, and I sign them up for next year.
What are the times for Art Fest this weekend?
Yeah, it's on Saturday, it's 10 to 6, and on Sunday, 10 to 4.
It's really one of the biggest events this summer, and it is so fun. You get to have family, you get to see everyone in town. It's just really one of the best events.
My guests have been Vicki Arndt. She's the curator of the Public Arts Commission in Grand Forks. Vicki, thanks so much for joining us today.
Oh, it's so fun. Thank you.
And Hall of Famer, I'll say, Dean Opp. He's on the board of the Public Arts Commission and is committee chair of Art Fest, which is this weekend, June 7th and 8th, Saturday and Sunday. Saturday from 10 to 6, Sunday from 10 to 4. It's at University Park. Over 100 artists, artisans, and food vendors and musicians. It's free and it's family friendly, and there'll be over 20,000 of us. Art lovers, maybe new to art, checking it out this Saturday and Sunday, and we invite everyone to attend. Thank you both for joining us on Main Street.
I am Cole Maring, and I am from Fargo, North Dakota. I choose to be a Prairie Public Sustainer because of the myriad programs that they have that I find really valuable. Give me a more nuanced view of the world, introduce me to new great music. Oh, I think others should support Prairie Public for the same reason I do. These things don't just happen without us supporting them. Stuff that you're never going to hear, but you're going to love when you do hear it. Yeah, favorite programs and shows. I like to hear my Dakota Datebook every day. I really like Into the Music with Mike Olson. I liked the previously the Thomas Jefferson Hour with Clay Jenkinson. Just really, really great stuff. My favorite Prairie Public radio personality, I would have to say, is Dave Thompson. I think that we just need to really do our best to appreciate it more and more.
You could be like Cole and become a sustaining member of Prairie Public today. It's easy. Just go to prairiepublic.org and open the donate tab.
Still to come on Main Street, it's fun to ask the question, who's the GOAT? The greatest of all time, and is it Tom Cruise? Matt O'Lean reviews the movie Mission Impossible, The Final Reckoning, and he'll ask that very question. Plus, Dave Thompson and I will review the news. That's all ahead on Main Street. Stay with us.
Extra, extra, read all about it. Gather around, everybody.
Dave Thompson's going to tell us a story as he does each and every day here on Prairie Public, but we review the news here on Thursdays on Main Street. Dave, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Craig. Good to be here.
Dave, there's a conservative group that hopes to reshape the North Dakota Republican Party. Is this to make the party go farther to the right, about the same, or more moderate?
I think this one is looking to go further to the right. The organizers want basically more adherence to the nine planks of the GOP party platform. The people who are more toward the right wing of the party have been saying for a long time. They're talking about things they didn't like, that Governor Armstrong vetoed that library bill. They didn't like some of the things the legislature came up with. There's some grumbling that the legislature didn't go far enough in terms of property tax reform and relief. So there's a lot of things that are, shall we say, motivating this wing of the party. And they're saying what we need to do is they're going to have a convention in August to talk about this. At the grassroots level, they want people to sign up to go to their district conventions to become, you know, delegates and maybe get elected to positions in their districts and go to the state party convention and maybe push a more conservative type agenda.
This group is called, Dave, the Freedom League of North Dakota.
Yeah, they've incorporated now, and they've got a dues structure, and you have to pay dues to become a member. And if you want to go to the convention, you'll have to pay the dues.
Dave, if I were to ask you, who is in charge, who's the leader of the Republican Party in North Dakota today, how would you respond to that question?
The leader of the Republican Party is Sandy Sanford, the wife of Brent Sanford, the former lieutenant governor. Now, she's been trying to be more of a unifier if she could. There was some concern that she was probably too far to the right for some of the more normal Republicans. But no, she's trying to be, you know, trying to kind of keep it together. It's not easy when you have so many potential factions in a party like that. And let's just say political parties do that. We've seen the Democrats do that when they were in control. Apparently fissures started developing there. And in the Republican Party, there are a few, you know, arguments developing there. So we'll have to watch this one, and I'm interested to see what happens when they meet in their state convention.
Where does the governor sit in on this, Dave?
The governor hasn't weighed in yet. The governor is more of the normal type Republicans, or what you'd call the mainstream Republican Party. And he's walked a pretty, you know, narrow line to make sure that he's not too conservative, not liberal. So he tries to walk that line.
Dave, let's go on to bad news, really, in the state. North Dakota has the highest rate of measles in the country.
It's very sad, isn't it? North Dakota is now number one, and it's because our caseload keeps growing. And this is per 100,000 population, so the numbers, there aren't that many so far, but there's still the concern that we could see more as more people are exposed to it. And it used to be Texas was the epicenter. Now it looks like North Dakota has moved to the epicenter. And Craig, we have to remember that at one point in the COVID situation, North Dakota was one of the top states in terms of, you know, infections per 100,000 people as well.
Speaking of records we want to run away from, don't want anything to do with, wish we didn't have to talk about, the weekend air quality readings were the worst in North Dakota history.
I couldn't believe it. Now, I have a little anecdote to tell you. A bunch of friends went hiking on Saturday. We went to Theodore Roosevelt National Park, went early in the morning, and when we were out there on Saturday, the air quality index did not get above 50, which still is pretty good. But as we got in the interstate and drove back east, it kept getting worse and worse and worse. And when we stopped in Bismarck, it was 300. Later on, I found out that at Newtown, it was over 500. So that's very unhealthy air. So we have had that record unhealthy air, and that's due to the fires, of course, in Saskatchewan and Manitoba and Alberta, Canada.
Dave, one of the great family events in the state, I think, is the Jamestown Kite Festival. We went again, maybe have been there a half dozen times. Boy, I was so sad that the smoke really impacted the fun of that event.
And I understand that there were some issues that were brought up during the Fargo Marathon as well.
All right, Dave, there's a program called Get Home Safe North Dakota that has showed some positive results in the first year. First, remind us what it is and what are those results?
Okay, this is the case where it's sponsored by the Workforce Safety and Insurance folks, and they're trying to say, let's try to stop injuries before they happen. So when they say get home safe, they've got materials on their website for companies to take a look at in terms of safety training, making sure that workers are safe and remain safe. And even though the number of workers covered by workforce safety and insurance went way up, the number of injuries stayed fairly flat, which is a good sign.
Dave, well, I was in Wyoming, specifically in Riverton, affiliated with Central Wyoming College. The community, the state was proud that it built a new Jobs Corps Center. Beautiful place. From all accounts, things were going well. And then out of left field, here comes the news. We're shutting down. The same things happen with the Minot Jobs Corps Center.
That is correct. Yeah, the Burdick Job Corps Center in Minot and its affiliate Job Corps Center in Fargo, that they're shuttering. And it's caused because there's a pause in funding. And there's a lot of scrambling now to make sure that, you know, kids who are going through the program to learn trades and who may be staying there, otherwise they'd be homeless. There's a scramble in order to make sure those students are taken care of. And that'll be interesting to listen to and watch.
Dave, speaking of cuts, North Dakota tribes are pushing for more autonomy amid the federal cuts that they are experiencing. What's new there?
Well, what's new is that they're worried about cuts into Indian health services. They're worried about cuts and other things that do benefit the tribes. And they are worried and they need to find some ways to, you know, maybe make up the difference. So during this two-day thing where they have a government-to-government event in Bismarck, where the governor actually is a co-host and he meets with the tribal leaders, that they're trying to do some more self-sufficiency things. Now, Turtle Mountain has been one of the leaders in that, and Turtle Mountain has come up with a few things. You know, Turtle Mountain has oil, so that helps. But they've also are embracing carbon capture for an interesting reason. They're building greenhouses using the CO2 to grow plants, which again shows they are resilient. And I think other tribes are doing some of the same things. They're resilient, but there's still an issue there that federal money is not going to be coming perhaps like it was.
Dave, what are you and your news team working on?
I have an interesting story I just wanted to tell you about really quickly. And there is a high voltage DC power line that goes from the center area into serving communities in Minnesota. Now, they're by power from wind farms that were put up in the center area and also from the old power plant that's up north of Washburn, which is now owned by Rainbow Energy. And what it is to, you know, basically update the line, make the grid more secure. And the line was first put in, and it is interesting, by GE Electronics first, you know, put in the line as the construction. Well, GE no longer serves power lines. So they have to do some major upgrades. And we're talking about $500+ million in upgrades to get the power and reliable power into Minnesota.
I've never heard of a DC power line, Dave.
That is really interesting because they like DC lines because there's no loss. With AC, normal AC lines, there can be some power loss. But DC is a way to do it without the loss that you have in the normal power lines.
We'll look forward to that story. And Dave, we review the news with you, our veteran news director here at Prairie Public, each and every Thursday. Thanks again for joining us on Main Street.
You are welcome, Craig. Glad to do it.
Support for Prairie Public is provided by the Bush Foundation, announcing the 2025 Bush Fellows. Meet the leaders thinking bigger and differently about what's possible for their communities in Minnesota, North Dakota, South Dakota, and the 23 Native Nations that share that same geography. More information at bushfoundation.org.
There's the fanfare that we air each and every Thursday here on Main Street. Of course, it's time to go to the movies with our great movie reviewer, Matt Olien. Matt, welcome back to Main Street.
Thanks, Greg.
Today, we take the plunge into Mission Impossible, The Final Reckoning, where Tom Cruise defies gravity, aging, and artificial intelligence all before breakfast. Ethan Hunt's eighth Impossible Mission 8, Matt. That's
crazy.
It's hard to believe. Let's run the trailer here, Matt, and then we'll talk about the show.
This can't all be true.
Every word.
CIA Black Vault break-in.
Am I reading this correctly? The Kremlin bombing?
In fairness, the bomb was actually meant to kill him.
He gassed a security briefing.
That was just 2 months ago.
This explains the handcuffs. It's still not clear why he's here.
If we want to bring the world back from the brink, we have to deal with him.
Should he choose to accept?
Smart people on every side are close to panicking.
What exactly is your plan?
Your team has been betrayed, Ethan. All your secrets compromised.
Everything you are. Everything you've done. Has come to this.
Gave him an aircraft carrier?
Our lives are the sum of our choices. This is your calling. Your destiny. I have no regrets. Neither should you.
I need you to trust me. One last time.
All right, Matt, it's an action-packed, epic thrill ride, it seems to me. What do you think about the movie?
Well, it's I can't believe this is the eighth installment. Like you said, 1996 was the first Mission Impossible movie. And this is a long one, and this is probably the last one, is what I'm kind of hearing through the grapevine. And because it's the last one, that's probably why it runs almost 3 hours. That's right, almost 3 hours. That's an epic length for a film like this, in my opinion. I think it gets a little too long. I think the exposition at the beginning in the first hour could have been trimmed maybe a little bit, but there's a lot of flashbacks early on, Craig, to kind of get people caught up. I got the sense they were getting people caught up that hadn't seen all seven previous movies. There's a lot of flashbacks to previous scenes, previous characters. So you're kind of up to speed. The plot is incredibly complicated, as they all are in espionage movies, right? There's something called the Entity that, if it gets control of things, will kind of ruin things on Earth. It's complicated to explain. I'm not going to get into it. The villain is a guy named Gabriel, played by S.A. Morales. And the usual cast is back. Tom Cruise, Haley Atwell, Sam Pegg, Ving Rhames. Hang on to your hats, because not everybody's going to survive this movie. There are some, you know, poignant things that are going to happen in this movie as we go for 3 hours long. Essentially, Cruise is basically asking the president, played by Angela Bassett, to give him 48 hours to stop the Entity. And it's very complicated. They're up in the icy waters of Alaska through much of the film, on a remote island, where they meet a kind of scientist up there who used to work for the CIA, who's living there with his indigenous wife. That's an interesting side plot. But again, you know, it debuts at $91 million opening weekend, Memorial Day weekend. That's amazing for an eighth installment in a series. And we'll get to that in a few minutes, Craig, about Tom Cruise's impact on the box office. But in general, I liked it. I do think it's too long. I think the plot, the two friends I went with said, there were some continuity issues. I'm like, this plot is crazy. It's not real life. You know, James Bond wasn't real either, was he? No, he wasn't undercover. Everybody knew who he was. Welcome, Mr. Bond, to Istanbul. You know, do you want your same room? How is that undercover? So a lot of these espionage films are completely crazy. There's a lot of things going on here that really work, and some that don't work as well. But again, in the end, it delivers what it promises. And what are those promises, Craig? Action-packed thrills. There's a cross-cutting climax near the end of the film that goes on a long time, I'm telling you. It's cross-cutting between Haley Atwell and her group trying to do something in this bunker in Africa, and cross-cutting to Cruise trying to stop Gabriel S.I. Morales. So there's a lot of airplane stuff. There's a lot of stuff with Cruise hanging off airplanes, him running at top speed at age 62. There's a scene with him on a treadmill with his shirt off. He does not look 62. Whatever people may think of him off screen with the Scientology stuff, he's a great star and he gets people in the theater. So I think it's too long, but it's made over $100 million already, and that's amazing.
Struck me, Matt, that 30 years ago when this all started, none of us were talking about artificial intelligence at all. And now here we are. It's an integrated part of this movie. Did that offer fresh insights, or was it just a plot device for more explosions?
It's a plot device. It's really not that big of a deal in the movie. The key is stopping the Entity, which is this kind of, I can't even explain to you what it is. It's called the Entity, and it has to be stopped, or it's going to take control of a lot of things around the world. There's nuclear missiles ready to go off. Does that sound familiar? You know, typical James Bond film is the villain hijacks some missiles, right, and holds people hostage. So it's the usual stuff. But this series, directed for the most part by Christopher McQuarrie, he's the director, and he's done four of these, and he's very close with Tom Cruise. So he's kind of taken control of the series by directing four of the eight. He does a nice job with the action scenes. You know, the ending is pretty poignant as well. You're kind of hoping some things happen that maybe don't, but people will have to go see it. It's going to be in the theaters for a while.
All right, Matt, you threw out a question on social media relative to Tom Cruise. Set up the question, and then we'll talk about it.
So my question was, we've got a 40-plus year sample size now of him as a film star. Is he the greatest male movie star of all time? I tossed that out there on Facebook. I got a lot of good comments. Some people weighed in with Scientology stuff. I said, I'm not really here to talk about that. Let's talk about him as a film star. I think he's top five. I mean, I know some people think he's crazy and whatnot, but the stunt work that he does, the overseeing of the productions, and let's face it, I think in the post-COVID era, he is the only movie star in the world. Brad Pitt might be the other, who can put people in seats just to go see him. Who in our lifetime, Craig, can you say can do that? Well, I think Clint Eastwood and John Wayne for sure. People went to John Wayne and Clint Eastwood movies. Why'd they go, Craig? To see John Wayne and Clint Eastwood. And I think with Top Gun Maverick and Mission Impossible, look, we're in an era where a lot of people I know don't go to movies. They sit at home. They watch them on Netflix. They can get up and go to the bathroom. They can talk during the movies. They like COVID changed the film industry. And so in a post-COVID era, he can still get people into a theater. So I think that has to be taken into consideration that he's a top 10 male film star of all time. I just named a couple that are in the top 10, Eastwood, John Wayne. I think Humphrey Bogart, Cary Grant, you know, Brando, Charlie Chaplin are certainly people that, and when I say a great film star, I'm talking three things, Craig. Acting ability, which Cruise has. He's not an Oscar winner, but he's been nominated three times. Is he Daniel Day-Lewis or Marlon Brando or Laurence Olivier? No, but he puts people in chairs, and that's the big part. And how big is he and how famous is he in the public eye? And I think he's a bigger star than Harrison Ford, who gets mentioned a lot because Ford kind of lucked his way into that Star Wars franchise, right, Craig? Tom Cruise didn't have a franchise when he started out. He was making teen movies. So in a way, I think what he's achieved is probably more so than Harrison Ford. And Harrison Ford got lucky because he knew George Lucas, let's face it. I'm not putting Harrison Ford down. I just think Cruise is probably a bigger film star.
In my lifetime, I would think about Jack Nicholson.
He's right up there. He's top 10.
Maybe Al Pacino for me and Robert De Niro. Certainly Harrison Ford, but I don't disagree that Tom Cruise puts rears in seats.
He does.
That's for sure. Like no one else that I've ever seen. But I just don't have a feel for it. Maybe 1970s, if there were any actors or actresses for that matter, who you had to go see just because they were in the show. And would that have been, you know, someone like a Marlon Brando or someone like that?
Well, you know, Brando's box office kind of went up and down with his career. You know, he had those comebacks with Godfather and things like that. But he's kind of got the combination of great actor plus film star. But I think if we're talking butts and chairs, like you just said, Eastwood and John Wayne are kind of the only two in my lifetime that were still big stars that people went to see them in movies. I don't know that people go to see Pacino and De Niro in movies. I think they were in some really great movies. They're great actors. I think Nicholson's top 10. I really do. He's a great actor plus a great star. I think Paul Newman's top 10. You know, Redford had a run there in the 70s that was almost unmatched. But Cruise now has been putting people in theaters for over 40 years, from Risky Business right through to this. I don't know where he goes from here. In terms of action films, they're talking about him making a movie up in space. I'm not kidding. I'm not making that up. That has actually been talked about. You know, him shooting a movie up in space in a spaceship. He moves the needle. He does a lot of his own stunts. And I think that's part of the package, too.
He has never been nominated for an Academy Award for the Mission Impossible franchise.
No.
He has for others. Does that surprise you?
No, I think he's moved into the action realm more, which means you're not going to get Oscar nominations, whereas Brad Pitt, his contemporary, and I think Pitt is the only contemporary I can compare Cruise to. They're roughly the same age. Pitt's won an Oscar, though, and I think Pitt has a little more range as an actor. We've seen Pitt kind of stretch himself as an actor with Benjamin Button and Moneyball and Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. He's got a new film coming out called F1, which I think is going to be a hit. We do get these occasional really great performances by Cruise, especially in Magnolia. You know, he's not going to play Lincoln like Daniel Day-Lewis. You know, he's not going to play The Godfather. I think he's kind of resigned himself that if he ever gets an Oscar, it's going to be an honorary one. But I could be wrong about that, too.
All right, let's go to the Oscar trivia part of our show. Tom Cruise's first nomination for Best Actor came from the 1989 film Born on the 4th of July. In the 1990 Academy Awards, who won Best Actor?
I just mentioned him. Daniel Day-Lewis won for My Left Foot, his first of three wins.
Before we go, Matt, Adam Sandler in Uncut Gems derailed himself into a different genre actually chasing an Academy Award. Do you think Tom Cruise might do that, get away from the action movies here as he ages to do something special that would be Academy Award worthy?
You know, he certainly could. He's got the clout to go do a project like that. You know, you're right. Sandler was chasing an Academy Award that year, and he did not get the nomination. And I had some friends that thought he was robbed.
I thought he was great in the movie.
He was great in the movie. I don't know if I love the movie. You know, it's possible that Cruise could do that. You know, Brad Pitt, fortunately, got in Tarantino's Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and he's so good as Cliff Booth, you know, in that movie. It's possible. We'll have to see. I'll have to check like what he's got lined up coming up.
We've been to the movies with Matt Olean.
If you really want to know what's going on in this country ahead of the election next year, you've got to get away from the extremes and listen to The Middle.
Hi, my name is Venkat. I'm calling you from Atlanta, Georgia.
On my new live national call-in show, The Middle with Jeremy Hobson, we'll elevate the voices of Americans who need to be part of our national conversation.
Hi, Jan, here in Kansas City, Missouri.
Join me every week for The Middle with Jeremy Hobson.
The Middle. Listen Fridays at 3 p.m. Central, 2 Mountain on Prairie Public.
This is Dakota Datebook for June 5th. North Dakota has close ties with Minnesota, sharing many overlapping interests, with business being one of the biggest. On this date in 1925, the city of Bismarck prepared to welcome businessmen from St. Paul to discuss potential business ventures. In anticipation of their arrival, the Bismarck Tribune extended a right royal welcome to those coming to where the West begins. The newspaper noted that the two states shared common interests that bind them in a lasting bond of personal interest and friendship. The Tribune hoped that by the time the businessmen returned to Minnesota, they would have a better understanding of the advantages North Dakota had to offer. The newspaper highlighted things that would make the trip more enjoyable for the visitors, including the state's three transcontinental railroad lines and its top-quality public education system. North Dakota was also home to 22,000 square miles of coal, and top-quality pottery was being made from North Dakota clay. The article pointed out the state's evolution from its early farms to a more diversified agriculture, including beef cattle, dairy cows, hogs, sheep, and poultry. Vast fields of alfalfa, corn, and wheat stretched across the state. In the previous year, North Dakota's agricultural sales had amounted to over $4 million, equivalent to more than $7 billion today. By 1925, North Dakota had made tremendous progress in the 36 years since statehood. There was a sense in the state that while the eastern states were older and played out, North Dakota was on the rise. Despite having a late start, North Dakota had achieved first place in the production of hard wheat, flax, and winter rye, second in barley, and third in rye. The state was proud of its claim to the best agricultural climate, plenty of pure water, enough lakes and rivers, ample rainfall, and abundant sunshine. The newspaper proudly stated that North Dakota farmers produced crops and livestock with the season's rainfall, without irrigation, inoculation of the soil, or a single ounce of manufactured fertilizer. However, the article's authors could not have known that hard times were ahead, with the Dust Bowl just around the corner. Today's Dakota Datebook was written by Dr. Carol Butcher. I'm Errol Pepcorn.
Dakota Datebook is produced in cooperation with the State Historical Society of North Dakota, with funding from Humanities North Dakota.
Arts programming on Prairie Public is supported in part by the North Dakota Council on the Arts, a state agency developing, promoting, and supporting the arts in North Dakota.
I'm Ira Flatow. On Science Friday, we wonder about the secrets of nature and meet the scientists finding the keys to the universe, like black hole maven Jan 11.
I think it's really important as a scientist not to put a belief system first. The whole point is to explore the unknown.
Come explore with us. It's all on Science Friday from WNYC Studios.
Science Friday. Listen every Friday evening at 7 Central, 6 Mountain on Prairie. Prairie Public.
And that's a wrap for this Thursday's Main Street. We are deeply grateful that you spent time with us. Tomorrow at 3 p.m. Central, it's The Middle with host Jeremy Hobson. He asks the question, what's the role of Christianity in our politics? And at 7 p.m. Central on Friday, it's Science Friday with Ira Flato. From all of us here at Prairie Public, we hope you have a great North Dakota weekend, and we look forward to seeing you again on Monday right here on Main Street.